finish up based on what they said about the Kiva pretty much today, and I want to talk, try to finish up again, Masa Grishoso, Emir Tashem, on Sunday, and then like maybe Tuesday, we can do the Chutz and the Sefer Tzadigim, the Tzadigim issue. That's the plan, anyway. And then I'll give you probably Sunday Mar Makomos for the question of Mipim Velom Piksavam and Shtaros, and we'll start with Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Meir, and then we'll be able to pop into the first parak. That's the, at least that's the plan. Okay, so just a couple of quick points. So we were discussing the problem of Beis Shammai. I should mention, I think I mentioned the Pnei Yehoshua. It's a very interesting, he has a very interesting discussions. I thought that he also clearly suggested that according to Beis Shammai, the requirement of Matzah Be'erbas Davar would be Ma'akev B'di'eved as well, but that I didn't find when I was re-examining it. I didn't find that, and if anything, it sounds like the opposite. I think the Beis Meir in Shulchan Aruch holds that way, and others hold that way, but that is not correct in terms of the Pnei Yehoshua. But what is correct is that he does ask the question, why do you need an Iser of Grusha L'Kohen? Just like the Yerushalmi asks the question, why do you need Masa Grushaso? And the answers that he proposes, as we discussed, kind of go through the gamut of possibilities. Again, the Knesset Gdola doesn't call them all by name, but the distinction between Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, between Arusa and Nesua, whether it's only Neitz Tova, all those kind of issues are things that he explores, and explores in an interesting way, including the possibility of distinguishing between Biritzona and Bal Korcha as a way of answering the Yerushalmi. And with regard to that, let me just mention one other thing, and that is that Binyamin brought up the point that really the Tshuva Saran and the the Poskim in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah and others who quote this, are working off the Tshuva Saran, but the Tshuva Saran zeroes in on the question of the Mizbeach being Morid and the Ma'os, etc. But I looked at the language again. It is true that he zeroes in on that, but it also is true that what he's trying to explain, the context of what he's trying to explain, is the problem of Nishba Levatel as a mitzvah. And, he's talking about whether or not there's any Nindud, right? Do you have language there, Binyamin? Any Nindud Shel Aveira, or not. So even though, again, he is zeroing in on more on the Agadata part of the Gemara, but he, like we suggested, he thinks that is connected with the question whether there's some sort of Avera. And by, exploring the connection to Nishba Labatel as a mitzvah, he actually kind of raises the ante a little bit. Because, again, part of what we've been discussing, and we're hopeful we'll get back to the Rambam, today, is, you can use the Gemara itself definitely uses language of mitzvah Lagaresh and Rasha and Ra'a, on the one hand, for a woman whose behavior mandates, the radical solution of Gerushin. And definitely the Gemara also uses the language of, Sonu Lamokom and, et cetera. In the opposite case, maybe where the Baal is being, is acting on a whim and acting frivolously and trivializing, both the Ishus and being disrespectful to the relationship and to the persona, of his wife. So we have all these Lashonos, whether it's mitzvah or Isser or Russia, or Ra'a, in one direction, or Sanui, or Ra'a, or Ma'us, or Ta'uv. we have them a lot, both in Chazal, in the Gemaras, and in some of the Rishonim and in some of the Poskim. But as we've been indicating, the question is, and especially I think this is true for the Rambam, are these, like more general statements, like we're unhappy with you, or, what you're doing is inconsistent with being, a proper, Oved Hashem, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're like violating some specific, you know, formal isur, especially not in the context of gerushin. Right. Again, I've already said it, so it's not a secret. But meaning the Rambam uses this kind of language too, in you know Hilchos Gerushin, and it's clear that he doesn't mean that that's the isur. You know, that he doesn't mean that that's a mitzvah legaresh, you know, in the case of Batzubar and so on and so forth. And probably in the other direction as well. It's more what I call the Hilchos Deos issue. But for the Tshuva Saran to discuss Nishba Levatel as a mitzvah, you know, is actually more intriguing. You have a line, Binyamin?
I can read the whole Shiloh, like really sets up the last.
Yeah, go ahead, just quickly though. Since I came late, not your fault.
Something.
It's not Robert or Samantha, right? That's what I thought originally, but then I looked at it. Yeah. Go ahead. More like Bartholomew. So what's the upshot?
So
a sad story.
Fight, basically.
What?
There's a fight.
Yeah.
And then Nishba Levilti Yigarsha Zulasi Baskama Shlosha. So he's Nishba, he's not going to divorce her without Haskama Shlosha. Echad Mehem some person Asher Hu Hayom Be'eretz Merchakim. Ve'od Asar Asma B'chol Perisha Ba'olam Chutz Mipas Umayim Imigarish Lovishus on his car. So he just basically enforces the shul. Ba'od shav la'asus kachav ha'macheres v'tal shvuasa v'isur ba'achirim o b'kodmim k'fi asher tira rabbeinu v'shtar kabalas edus sheish b'yad v'izeh ad she'echad min ha'edim she'hayu b'mayim et ha'shvua v'ha'isr ha'yameid she'amru v'isur she'kol pam u'pam she'yishal v'yutar me ha'isr she'yachol alav pam ha'cheres v'chein lo'or av la'bachar makfi she'omizeh l'fi ha'amor k'is. That person is really far away. So basically, he made the shvuah and he can't get out of it because the person is not present.
Correct. So what's the upshot?
So we
understand the question. So in the issue, but so this part of the issue is nishba. The status of this shvua, right, and whether it's you know nifan lahafara, whether what kind of shvua it is, etc.
Yeah.
So what is the ran? That's where the ran later on. Now you can skip to that part.
Right. So then he says that. He says the shvua sheh. Tchila tzarich ani levara she'ein shvua zu l'kayim es hamitzvah.
Oh. So the point is that this is in a formal, there's a formal aspect to this din, and the Mizbeach Mori Demaos is just part of the presentation. Okay? And again, it's not surprising then that the Rama in, what is it, Kuf Yud Tes Sif, what is it, base? Base? Gimel? Gimel? Something. In Shulchan Aruch, actually quotes this Tshuva Saran, right? And that certainly catapulted it, you know, from a history of halacha point of view, put it this way. The fact that the Rama and others endorsed it, you know, that became so again. So even though the narrower focus, you know, is something that is could be more, you know, technical, more you could dismiss it, more just hashkafic, you could say. But it's the extent that this is kind of related to Nidba Levatel as a mitzvah or Lekayim as a mitzvah, obviously that gives it greater significance. Okay, so that's number one. But again, you know, the other side of it is that this is a chiddush of the Ran. Not everybody agrees. Certainly a lot of the Achronim don't agree. And again, it's not, you know, quoted in a lot of the poskim. And obviously, the more this is a din in, you know, the chetza shel ishus and its kedusha, rather than, you know, worrying about, you know, the ben adam lechavero, the future of the woman, the, her disrespect, her, and so on and so forth, you know, the factor of bal karcha maybe doesn't really as much come into play. Certainly if it's about, like, objective, you know, chetza shel ishus, you know, etc. Okay. The idea that you still could have been mechalek between a stricter Beis Shammai, again, if the gap between Beis Shammai on the one hand and the other shitos is really qualitative and isn't just, you know, about, you know, objective, compelling grounds for divorce, but it's even more that about a likui, about a chisaron in the ishus itself, meaning the kedusha is already compromised and that's part of it, you know, then the idea that, you know, bal korcha or biritzona, unless our two tracks, unless you want to say there are two ways, you know, to end the marriage. One way is objectively, if the, you know, there's an erosion or a corruption of kedusha sa'ishus, that's one way. And then there's another way, and that is if there's, you know, agreement of both parties. That would be mechudash to say that there are two, you know, two possibilities. The Netziv, you know, in Hamikdabar doesn't say it about these two things, but does suggest that, you know, that there are two implicit in the language of the Torah. We'll get back to that. That maybe there are two, like, tracks, you know, of Gerushin, you know. But again, he goes with the, you know, and certainly again, you know, Ruchem Fischer Perlo thinks that that is a mainstream view. But that more about, you know, get me'ava and get, you know, misina. But once you're saying something like that, if you want to say that there's a consensual get, and then there's also a, you know, a balkarka get, and that those are two different things, that's possible. But either way, that becomes an important issue. Second point regarding the discussion. Let's go back to the Yerushalmi just for a minute, and that is just to note. You know, it's part of the question is really it's very, you know, it's a subtle difference, but it's an important, has important ramifications, and that is, again, is the Yerushalmi's question the incompatibility of Beis Shammai, you know, with there being a separate Yisr Masa Grushaso? Because objectively, every case of Gerushin and Masa Grushaso is already a Sota. That's the question. Is that the question of the Yerushalmi, or is the question of the Yerushalmi more a Parshanut influence question, as we discussed? Namely, since the Torah is speaking about the circumstances, you know, of Matzah Ba'ervas Davar exclusively according to Beis Shammai, so, you know, wouldn't it always be superfluous under those circumstances? But the claim is not being made that there are no circumstances under which, you know, it makes sense that there would be an independent Isur of Matzah Grushasa. But that's the two things that we were discussing. One of the things that we were saying is that the Rajba, you know, kind of dismisses what would be conceptually, you know, and substantively a good answer, you know, to the, you know, this is inconceivable, there's no outlet for Masa Grishaso, by saying Bidiyavet, right? He dismisses that by saying, you know, that the Yerushalmi, you know, would still have difficulty because the issue is about reading the Psukim in that case. And as I mentioned, the Pnei Yoshua says, no, you know, we find in other cases too in Psukim that can be read, you know, not referring only to the case, you know, in question, but introduced, let's say, by the broader circumstances and so on. So I just wanted to bring to your attention, I was just saying that if you look carefully at the language of the Yerushalmi, and then the way that the Balei Tosas quote it, and it's interesting that Tosas doesn't give an answer, you know, to this question, there's a slight, you know, difference in emphasis, and maybe those are the two points, right? The language of the Yerushalmi, as Tosas quotes it, Yerushalmi parich amai itzterich kra de lo yucho bala shashucho lashuv lekachta, typically, the Balabachi also lahaksir sotaso. Right? Whereas the language of the Yerushalmi actually is. Everybody have it open? 1 second. And that's the way the Rajba quotes it also. Ma nan kaimin, right? Im la osralav kvar hi asuralo. So ma nan kaimin is like a neutral language. You know, it could be read as saying, like, how are you going to read the psukim? Because the hemshech ha-psukim, if they're talking about a case of Dvar Erva exclusively, according to Beis Shammai, and you have a narrow meaning of that, reading of that, then, you know, then there's no hechet timtzi in that case for this institution. But the way that Tosas is, quote, asking the question, right, is, and then it's interesting that Tosas doesn't give, you know, an answer. They just quote Yerushalmi. Sounds like they think this is, Yerushalmi is a, you know, destroys, you know, Beis Shammai somehow. But the way Tosas asks it, it sounds more like, again, not saying you can't read it differently, but Amai Itzrich Kra is different than how will you read the Pasuk? It's, you know, what do you need the whole institution, you know, for? Okay, so that could very well be the issue. And then the implication that, yeah, if there's no answer to this question, it's, you know, because even Bidyeved, according to Beis Shammai, not only the Beis Shammai's grounds, you know, for you know, divorce are much more, you know, limited, but, you know, the fact that they are also about the core kedusha of the marriage and it's being objectively tarnished, you know, or the need for that, you know, is compatible with the conclusion, right, that not only, you know, is it permissible, you know, but maybe it's not even effective. Okay, and that, of course, is very important. If that's true, then that is really crucial. Okay, so that is just a you know, quick kahara, you know, on that point. Now, getting back to what we were ending up with, and that is just a couple of other quick points. Again, getting out of this problem, as I say, triggered like a huge, you know, so Yerushalmi, so. But the Yerushalmi kind of really hit home, I guess, you know. And it, I think, you know, the Mefarshim, they weren't just trying to be Miyashi, but a Yerushalmi. I think that they, you know, either explicitly or just intuited, you know, that this question, right, really goes to the heart of, you know, of what we've been discussing, which is, you know, whether Beis Shammai is just a whole different perspective, you know, on Gerushin or not. And that's why I think it gets the attention that it does. Of, you know, in addition to the fact that it's just a very good ha'ara, obviously. So, there were some technical answers to this question, too. Famous among them, we have in the Gilyon HaShas here, and that is the suggestion that Tzorech Kral Heched Bo Eide Hazama the Hizimu Eide Atuma. But, of course, he follows that by saying the Tzorechiyah. So nobody really wants to give a hechatimtzi answer to this question, meaning the case is really, even if you read like the Rajba, which, you know, the Rabbi Kinegar is familiar with, because he's Ayin Rajba B'tshuva, at least, you know, even if you take, you know, the problem is the hechatimtzi of Matzah B'Erva Zavar, according to Beis Shammai, you know, shouldn't, you know, allow for, or shouldn't, you know, make a requirement of Machzor Grushaso, right? So what Rabbi Kamager is saying is, you know, there can be a Hechetimtzi where you divorce legitimately, you know, based on, you know, Matzah Ba'ervas, you know, Davar, you know, but at some later point, there's clarification that that was all wrong. And that's really his suggestion. So this is a, you know, this is triggered like another discussion, and it's Archean. So the Chassam Sofer, for example, and in this one he says, oh, you know, he quotes Rabbi Kiv Eger as his, you know, as his father-in-law. You know, he was like his later father-in-law, his second marriage. The Chassam Sofer says, is that really compatible, you know, with the... with the way the psukim are understood by the Gemara, you know, which is that, you know, acherim la, right? And there's like a deserving of misa hakasav karo acher lomar she'ein ze ben zuga l'rishon. So the Chassam Sofer rejects Rabbi Kiv Eger for technical reasons, just saying it doesn't sound in the psukim like even by the time we can roll around to Machzor Grushaso, you know, it doesn't sound like, you know, we're dealing with somebody whose behavior was pristine. And therefore, he doesn't accept this idea. But two things just to comment on. Number one, in response to the Chassam Sofer to defend Rabbi Kiv Eger, as long as there's hazama on the sota part, right, you know, that doesn't have to mean that the that nothing untoward, you know, in terms of her behavior, you know, you know, justify, not justifies gay. No, you wouldn't have been megaresh, you know, under those, under lesser conditions, and that's where something like hazama comes in, and there's no sota, and therefore there's an iser machzor grushaso. But it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that her behavior is pristine. You know, maybe the fact that you could even get to the hazama reflects something different. But that's just like a technical hara. The bigger hara I wanted to make was, if it's really true that part of Yerushalmi's assumption is that if it's not Matzah Ba'ervas Davar, that the get is not Chal. So I wonder, you know, what you would say, Lamafreya. In other words, let's say, so the get was, you know, undertaken, because it was Edus that came forward and said that she was a Zona, that she's a Sota. You know, then Gloy Milsa, that there was Hazaba, and that all got, you know, thrown out. So, you know, what would be the status of the Ishus? I wonder. This is something to think about. Okay. Now, the other point in Rabbi Kiv Eger is what we were left off with, and I want to clarify that just a little bit more. And that is Rabbi... Oh, did you want a question? Somebody have a question? We're good. Good. Yeah, Rabbi Kiv Eger starts with the question, Hey Chal Iser Masuk Roshasol Iser Sota V'lo Kolo L'mosif V'lomar D'havik Zeres HaKasuv Minole Zeh. So I think that's very interesting. I already mentioned that, you know, you could spend time, but we're not going to, you know, discussing the details of Einis or Chal and Iser, and, you know, whether or not, you know, it's just a Din Onshim or, you know, even in the, you know, Iser itself. But, you know, that's number one. Of course, the question of Bevas Achas, in addition to the question of Kol Mosif, I already mentioned that, you know, some Achronim suggest that it is an Iser Mosif based on the Gemara Nivamos, you know, the possibility of combining, you know, Machzor Grushaso and Sota, you know, and creating, you know, that the Nafkamina might be whether the Vlad is a Mamzer. But as I say that, I'm going to get back to some Machzor Grushaso, but, you know, we've done 50% of it or 70%. So, you know, we're doing both at the same time pretty much. But, of course, that very combination, you know, that Machzor Grushaso, you know, Shel Sota, you know, would have a different status with regard to the Vlad, that in itself, you know, requires an explanation. Because if you take the view that, you know, Machzor Grushaso Lechud and, you know, Iser Sota Lechud, you know, it's like, eating, you know, Matzah Shel Tevel, you know, the Iser Ma, the, sorry, the Iser of Cham, the Is, and, or I should say, Chamet Shel Tevel, sorry. The Gemara in Psachim, you know, and daf, you know, lamed hay, So, you know, these are two things that have nothing to do with each other. And now the question is, like, what are the parameters, you know, of general of Einiser, you know, Kalal Iser? So then the idea that somehow, you know, the Vlad of Masa Grushaso is not a Mamzer, the Vlad of Asota is not a Mamzer, but the Vlad of Asota la'achar she'ichser Grushaso is a Mamzer, just a strange, obviously that would imply the fact that you could be Mitzaref them, and that they're, you know, that transcends, you know, either one, you know, already implies a certain kind of relationship. And then once that's true, even if you don't want to go according to that view or speak about Iser Mosif, then you get back to what I was saying the other day, and that is that, you know, just like there's no din of Ein Iser Chalal Iser when you have, you know, a lavar of the Shnayim, you know, in any particular, you know, Maisa Avera. Or, you know, just like an asay and a lav can exist in the same aveira. I'm not talking about minyan and mitzvos, that's a matter of discussion and debate. But if, you know, according to the Rambam, you can have an asay and a lav, you can have shnei lavin. You know, according to the Rambam, at least you can have shnei lavin even more often. Right, so the point may be that when there's a relationship between, you know, the two isurim, this is the point I was trying to make, but it was towards the end of the shiur, the idea that, you know, and here this kind of a dialectic. On the one hand, it isn't purely lavar lav bishnayim. If it is lavar lav bishnayim, you wonder why they're formulated, you know, differently. So once it's not, you know, it's not like two lavin, it's not bayiroam bayimatze, okay, which those of you here when we learned Pesachim a couple of years ago will know, or hopefully will remember, that I think are also a little bit different. They're related but different. Or Tmura, you know, lo yachlifenu v'lo yamir, you know. It's not exactly, you know, that, but it's close to that. Meaning, the more that it's not just like, you know, you have double, you know, you get a double whammy, you know, where, you know, it's more chamor, or it's more, you know, to encourage, you know, greater zahirus because it's more chamor, or because people will be, you know, mekel otherwise because it's more kal, whatever it is. What I'm saying here is that these are, the more we think that Masa Grushaso and Sota are put together in the same pasuk by the Torah, you know, for good reason and not just coincidentally, the more we think that we can draw some conclusions by this strange combination. I wouldn't say strange bedfellows. That sounds like the wrong phrase here, right? Even though it's like a broader terminology. But the same pasuk carrying both the Iser Sota and Masa Grushaso, that not being coincidental, and that being also the source for expanding, you know, Sota, which already exists in a previous parsha as a mitzvah aseh, which is also a very unique phenomenon. So I think all these things come together. In other words, that perspective on Mosif and, you know, the fact of the two psukim, again, just to make it clear, according to the Ramban, you know, in Sefer Mitzvos and alluded to in Ala Torah, these are two separate mitzvos in Minyan Taryag. Even then, even according to the Ramban, right, is it a coincidence that they're all in one pasuk and that the Torah is, you know, conveying information, you know, about Asay, the Lav, the Malkus, you know, in this way. I think even according to the Ramban, there's something to be said. We'll get back to the Ramban. But certainly for the Ramban, who only counts it once, and just the phenomenon itself, I think all these, you know, point in the same direction, in addition to the Ha'ara that I made, again, on Thursday, which was, there are two Girsos in this Yerushalmi, you know, and people discuss it even on the spot. And if you look here, I'm not going to go into the very much the details, but Hagos Marav Runtzberg, and you have the, you know, in the, you know, you have what is it, the Bach, right? Is it the Bach? No, maybe not the Bach. Whatever, you have different Girsos even in Balei Tosis, whether it's Lavar Olam Bishnayim or Bishnei Lavin. Or whether it's Lavar Ba'asei U'Balav. But I think I mentioned that if you have the Girsa Ba'asei U'Balav, you know, then there's something also to comment on, and that is, you know, basically it sounds like what we're saying is there's sota, and you don't need anything more than sota, but you still need this pasuk to teach you that sota isn't just ba'aseh, but bala. Okay, but if that's the way to understand that that girsa, right, then there's a problem. Namely, Aaron? Why do you need the words of Maksik Rushasso in that pasuk if it has no outlet, basically, other than, you know, to, I mean, it becomes even more difficult, in addition to the difficulty of why did you just put both, you know, in Bamidbar, or why did you find some other pasuk, you know, to be marbe this din, you're being marbe this din. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, there's an institution called Maksik Rushasso, there's something called Sota, they both apply, you know, to people, right? And for some reason, the Torah is bundling, is saving our ink and parchment on this halakha that so does bala. But if what we're really saying is that according to Beis Shammai, in Achanami, there's really no maksik rishaso, you know, other than this pasuk, you know, the pasuk is serving a function because it's still adding the lav of sota, well, that's really peculiar. So I think that it sounds like, and this is what I was alluding to the other day, that the theoretical din of Isar Maksu Grushaso, or maybe the actual din of Maksu Grushaso, you know, is somehow also responsible for bumping up, the number and the quality of the Onesh from an Asay to a Lav of Sota. I mean, somehow the perspective of Maksu Grushaso, you know, is that. And that is more than peculiar, right? But I think all of these can be understood if we take the position, you know, when we were discussing the second day of the Ramban al Torah, or just in general, the fact that the Rambam has this in Hilkos, Gerushin and so on. And that is that the idea of Maksik Rushaso and the crescendo in the Parsha and Kiteitze, you know, Ke'ilu, the, you know, Kiddushin is there and Gerushin is there, all for Maksik Rushaso. That whole story is all about, again, Kiddushas Ishus, and how Kiddushas Ishus, you know, establishes, you know, Dine Kiddushin, but even more so, you know, the protocol, the rigorous protocol, and the details of what it takes to demolish a Kiddushin, to be matir it, not just to undo it, to unravel it, you know, and that has to do with, you know, the role of the Baal, and the Ksiva, and the Lishma, and the Vishilka, and the Mibeso, and all of that, you know, if that's really what's going on, and therefore Maksu Grushaso itself, right, is not identical exactly with Sota, but it's, they overlap in a way, it's possible that not only do they overlap, you know, but, you know, Maksik Rushaso is made on an aspect of Sota, a dimension of Sota that we wouldn't know otherwise. And maybe the best way for that to be is through something like, you know, Maksik Rushaso. Maksik Rushaso expands Sota, and maybe Sota, you know, provides insight into Maksik Rushaso. You know, we could have perceived these each as kind of a narrow Isur, or different types of Isur Ebiya, and unrelated completely. And the fact that the Torah chose to bundle them and to intensify by adding a lav to the asay, you know, in Baloska of Sota, in this way, this methodology, in other words, is what reflects, you know, that it basically transforms, what I'm suggesting is it transforms our understanding of both Sota and Maksik Rushaso. And if that's the case, then the regular laws of Ein Iser Chalal Iser, you know, the way that we understand, you know, all of these issues, you know, just completely becomes transformed. And that's really what I think, you know, is going on here. Now, if that's what the Yerushalmi means in his answer, you know, Lav Arlav Bishnaim, or Lav Arlav Ba'asei U'Belosasei, then that really is a sensational, you know, conclusion. Yeah, Eitan.
Why would it be so difficult that you're Sabah Seva Lav? Mm-hmm. So why not just say that,
yeah, say the Lav going on Sota, right?
Yeah,
But there is still no institution. I'm just saying, if you read it in a radical way, consistent with what I think is the poshness of the question, namely, you're right, there's really no need for Machzor Grushoso, but if it wasn't for Machzor Grushoso, we wouldn't have a lav for Sota. Yeah. I mean, that's a pashtos.
Maybe it's only in that case.
What do you mean, only in that case? Well, I mean, that's possible, too. That gets a little bit more... I think that's mechudash, to say it's only that case. Only that case, is consistent with what I was talking about a minute ago, which was, you know, what about, like, is the combination of these two, you know, ever as a, like, you know, in terms of Vlad, you know, being a mamzer. But we have it also, we just haven't, you know, finished this yet, in the Nosei Kelim's striving to explain the Rambam, right, in Perek Yud Aleph, Hilchos Geirushin, Halacha, you know, Yud Beis through Yud Dalet. Meaning, if you look at the Kesef Mishnah, the Lecha Mishnah, they too have some of these combinations. The Netziv in his Perish HaMikdavar has a combination. So I don't think that's the simple pshat of the Rishalmi at all. I could be wrong. I mean, again, Rishalmis are gnomic. It's hard to know. But I think that's more mechudash. But we do have those chidushim. And I think the only way to kind of explain those chidushim, namely that, you know, if you have some sort of combination, if you're Machzor Sotaso, La'achar Geirushin, you know, then maybe that's the only time you have a lav and an asay. And let's say for the Rambam, what some of them are saying, Malkus, or they're considering that. That's also just shocking and sensational. Okay? And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I'm just, you know, it is. Meaning, like, where do we find, or put it this way, whenever we find, you know, this phenomenon, right, that in its own right, you know, the effects are only so far. You know, or the in their own right, each of two violations go only so far. But somehow when you combine them, you know, that creates some new chalos or some new... Then I think always the conclusion is that there has to be an enhancement. You know, there's some dimension, some aspect that each is contributing or deepening or accentuating for the other. So I'm saying that idea, you know, not so much in combination... You know, lemaisa or befoal, like you need masir sotaso, you know. But again, some are considering the possibility of. We'll get to it when we get to that. Hopefully Sunday. But masir, you know, sotaso, minageirushin, even without like an intervening ishus in between. Like normally, you need for the isur, you need an intervening ishus in between. But if she's a sota, then even without that, so we have to explain. I think there are other ways to explain it too, but. We'll get to it. Right, so that, okay, Eitan? So that's, I think, yeah.
Is there an explicit source for this type of understanding of Ein Yisrachal, is there?
As opposed to well, all I'm saying is, Ein Yisrachal is, yeah, I mean, first of all, I think the, I think if my memory serves me correctly, I think the Ramban says something very similar in Chulin, when he talks about, you know, the combination of Shabbos and Yom Kippur. If you want another example, I have to check again. That's my impression. Was it Kuf Aleph or something like that? And Chulin. Like, you know, again, where the like the Rishonim are troubled, like, you know, you know, is it Yisr Kol, is it Mosif, whatever? And the Ramban says something like, you know, the interrelationship between, you know, Shabbos and Shabbos Shabbason, something like that. You know, so that would be a parallel kind of an idea. But what I'm doing is I'm also starting a little bit backwards. In other words, the typical cases of Ein Yisr Chalal Yisr are cases where, you know, we just have a coincidence, you know, of two different and independent Yisurim. And it makes a lot of sense that, you know, and I'm also drawing on the idea that, you know, things like, you know, Bayir or Bayi Matzeh, although there, according to the Rambam, there's only one, you know, there only would have been, how many Malkios would there have been? That's a question. But you know, the Rambam typically doesn't. There's a parallel phenomenon. The Rambam typically doesn't count two lavin in the same topic. That's a major debate between the Rambam, you know, and the Ramban. and essentially have here too. Again, Rambam is not counting, you know, matzah, grishoso, and sota as independent, and the Ramban is. And in general, this is part of the debate in the Shorashim, Shoresh, you know, tests. You know, so we discuss that, you know, at other times. The Ramban does, yeah. But, you know, there are some exceptions where the Rambam does, like Vayra Bayimatzeh, right? And, you know, that's a minim mitzvah, that's a minim mitzvah issue. So, like, how do you explain that, you know? So, obviously, he thinks, so the way many of the Mefarshim explain that Rambam, again, I don't want to get too far afield, is they find, like, you know, Hechad Himsis, you know, where maybe you can have Bayra without having Bayimatzeh, so it isn't really that they're mirror, you know, multiple, you know, Lavin for the same thing, and that's why it's an exception. In my opinion, if you look carefully at the Rambam, not so carefully, I mean, it doesn't need that you look so carefully. It's pretty clear, but you just have to be looking for it. Both in Yad HaChazaka, but especially in Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam pretty much says, whenever you violate one, you violate the other. Bayura and Bayimatzeh. But I think if you look more carefully, he also emphasizes different, like, aspects of the violation. Like, if it were closer to Pesach, I'd elaborate. So I think what he means is, there are two mechayvim, right, Bayura and Bayimatzeh. They're subtly different, but also, it's in this case, each one kind of triggers the other. You know what I'm saying? So I think there are such examples, and the point is just that the, you know, the paradigm of Ein Yisur Chal Al Yisur, you know, just happens to be things where there are no, you know, interrelationship. So I think there's a lot, you know, for this to be based on. Okay, so that's in terms of the Beis Shammai part of it. Yeah. Say that again? Oh, I mean, that's a good question. You know, that is a very good question, and I don't have an answer to that. I mean, you're saying that part of this analysis is built, or part of the questions that I'm asking, or what I'm pointing out, is built on the assumption that what the Gemara says in Yevamos, Yad Aleph Amud Beis, is accepted by this text of the Yerushalmi. And maybe the Yerushalmi is saying something different. I hear that, but then what would it be saying? I mean, either way, it's saying either lavar olav b'shnei lavin or lavar olav b'yaseu b'lav. You mean, he means sota you only violate the asay all the time, and that the lav is only for machzik rishoso. So then the Torah is teaching us, you know, that is adding machzik rishoso for the sake of the lav. That's how you would read it. So let's assume for the moment that is correct. Again, it's hard to know whether, you know, as I think I mentioned the other day, in the, you know, in Yerushalmi Parshanut, or you call it, you know, if it was, you know, I guess a rebel class, you'd call it Yerushalmi exegesis. So, you know, there is like an interesting, this is like the interesting methodological question, right? Namely, you know, how much should you assume that there's like a single Mesorah between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, right? So, you know, in some cases, some of the, you know, Parshanim on the Yerushalmi, you know, go very far. Not just the assumptions, you know, that are implicit, but, you know, they even reread, you know, lines based on that. And I think probably the truth, like in most things, is somewhere in between. Meaning, we should assume mostly that there is, you know, coherence between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Like, I don't think we should default assume that they're fundamentally divergent. You know, but also we should be careful, especially when the text, you know, reads better in a different way or sounds like it's different. You know, we shouldn't be, you know, so reticent about the possibility that the Yerushalmi has a different mahalach, you know, that we, you know, read everything in the Yerushalmi in the light of the Baal. That's what I would normally say. And again, clearly, you know, the different Mefarshim and the Yerushalmi have different postures on this question. So I hear what you're saying. It sounds like, you know, I think even the Medrash Halacha, we have to check. Does the Medrash Halacha also quote this Sifrei in Kitetze about the Asay and the Lav?
Yeah.
Does, right? That would make it very, you know, that's much early. That would make it more likely that they have the same, you know, Mesorah. And that's a pretty big question, you know, you know, the question of minyan mitzvos and the mesorah, the pasuk, and so on. So I would be hesitant to say that. However, let's go with your idea for the moment. I still think you end up, you know, with an important answer of the Yerushalmi. Meaning, so then the Yerushalmi would be saying, right, every case of Machzor Kedushaso is a case of Sota, you know, but there's still benefit to Machzor having the Parsha of Machzor Kedushaso, right, because of the Lav. Correct? So again, you have to ask yourself, you know, if it's all the same case, like why did the Torah need to differentiate and write this pasuk in such a tortured way? So the answer still might end up being, just let me finish the point, and that is, the answer still might end up being because there's an overlap between the two. So maybe Sota always just gets an assay. And then when you are Maxi Grushaso, right, and you combine the two, you know, or the Maxi Grushaso aspect is even more chamor in some respects than the Sota aspect. Like the Sota aspect is, you know, personal, it's betrayal, etc. And the Maxi Grushaso aspect, if it isn't the addition, you know, the combination, but is about like attacking or playing, you know, fast and loose, trivializing the institutions, or taking, you know, an institution intended to guard, you know, the kiddusha of the ishus, you know, and turning it into a vehicle, you know, for you know, pritzus and znus. Do you understand what I'm saying? So even if I think it's an interesting read, I think it's possible. I still think if that's the case, you're still saying, you know, that the same case triggers two mechayvim that are related, you know, but that are, you know, still, like, you know, accentuating different dimensions of what they're related to. Is that? Say again? You mean the first day of the Ramban? Or the second? Well, no, if he does, I mean, the second day of the Ramban is saying that you could read the Pasuk, including the Toeva and the Tumma and the, you know, Nachala and the Tachti Asa'aretz, you could read all that even just with regard to Maxi Grushaso.
Right. So if
the Yerushalmi
reads it like that?
Could be. I'm just saying either way, like, there's this bigger issue.
But in that case,
it could be that I'm very influenced, but I stand by it. That's by being troubled, like why the Torah writes, why does the Torah convey, you know, these things in the way that it does, is what I'm saying. So at the end of the day, even if Yerushalmi is saying, I think if Yerushalmi is saying, what, you know, in the light of the Bavli, then it's clearer. I agree with that. But even otherwise, I think there's still, I'll put it this way, we'll just say, there are, to be intellectually honest, that there are two ways to read the Maskana if you read it your way. One is to say, Sota and Machzor Kedushaso have nothing to do with each other, but Machzor Kedushaso, you know, is still an important institution, even though it only applies in the case of Sota, because it's more chamor. You know, but, you know, there's no kesher whatsoever. You know, Hay Lechudekai v'Hay Lechudekai. And I prefer to read it that, you know, there's still, like, the, call it, epistemological question, which is, why did the Torah choose to teach us, you know, these dinim in this seemingly, you know, tortured, you know, way? And the answer is because they're, you know, these are overlapping ideas, you know, and therefore, you know, although Sota, you know, is always Machzor Kedushaso, you know, when you're Machzor Kedushaso, and she's a Sota, you know, then, you know, it's, you know, there's more to it even, because you're doing, you know, this trampling on the Kedusha Vishus, you know, in a multifaceted or in a more intense way, and that in itself deserves a lot, in addition to the essay. Okay? But I think it's a good horror. Now Yedidya has like a whole different read on the Yerushalmi, and then he wants to connect the question of Asay and Lav to the mitzvah of Gerushin, correct? So I'm not so sure about that, but I did find something close to it, except that I can't explain it. a little bit. And that's the... No, not because I don't, you know, I'm not comfortable with it. I just don't know how he reads it. And I had mentioned that there's a tshuva of the Rashbash. Okay, who is the Rashbash? One second. The Rashbash is the... Anybody know?
The son of the Tashbates.
Right? You know, if you were the Tashbates, you know, so... You know, and you know, you in the middle of the Bris Milah, you'd say, you know, my son, the Rashbash. You know, if you're already the Tashbates, why not have a son named Rashbash? Anyways, so I'm joking, but anyways, it's a tshuva of the Rashbash, who's the son of the Tashbates, 100%, and he talks about, again, it's one of those cases. I'm not gonna have Binyamin, you know, I'm not gonna poor Binyamin put him through the ringer and have him read the Shaila all over again, but what he ends up saying, you know, it sounds a little bit like, you know, Dine Shomrim. You know, the Gemara sometimes says about Dine, there are Dalid Shomrim and there are Gimel Dinim. So the Rashbash says there are Dalid Nashim and there are like Gimel Dinim. You have it? Tuf Yud Aleph. Okay, but you don't have to read the question. Although the question is interesting too. But, okay, this guy, he made a commitment to from Mizonos, right, to his mother-in-law, I think, right? Go ahead, Benjamin. Just the verse.
In Revel, they would probably only read the questions.
Exactly. I like that. You know, yeah. So, although, you know, Yesh Dvarim Bego, what you're saying, meaning if you read this tshuva of the Rashbash, you can really see the stuff going on. You know, the passions, the way that he's relating to his questions, obviously community things going on there in that tshuva. Even in the tshuva part of it. Anyway, so he committed, what did he do? Binyamin. I'm not going to let you off so easy. You know, he committed to, I think, support his mother-in-law, Tiamazonos. It's not there? Tough your knowledge?
No, I have parts of it.
It doesn't matter. You just have a computer. I have a phone. Right? You know, the Talmudo Biado, this is what it means now. Okay, so here, I think I wrote, I think I copied that. Ooh, one second. There's a tshuva of the Rashbash. Again, I don't want to stay on this forever, but this is quite interesting. One second. So many things on this phone. Interesting. Okay. Dalit. It's not there in Tuf Yud Aleph in the Tshuva of Rashbash?
You got it. It's here now.
It is there. Okay, I have it also. So what's the case? I think he made a commitment to the mother-in-law, but he wasn't explicit. Right? Yishan pasak lozon is ima. Like, why would anybody do that anyway? Kozlan sha zibul kayam, right? V'im tamus habas o tiskarish nistalka vazonus ha'im. Akka rotza haba l'garish. Amelo afapi she yigarish kayvu b'mazonus ha'im. Right? So if he's, you know, divorcing her, you know, does he get to, you know, exit his commitment to be Mepharnes, you know, the mother-in-law? Okay? Oh. So the Rashbash says, a few things in the Rashbash I think I already mentioned. Ani Omer, I'm skipping a little bit. You have the paragraph Dibur Masla Omnam, the last line. Ani Omer Sha'arba Noshim Heim V'dineim Shlosha. That was my, you know, hopefully humorous comment about the Shomrim, the Dalit Shomrim and Gimel Dina. So, Ha'achas, you know, he's Sha'osur Lagarsha. He basically has, you know, who are you obligated to divorce? Who are you permitted to divorce? Who are you, you know, Mitzuva to divorce? This is what he discusses. Ha'achas he Sha'osur Lagarsha, and that's the Beis Shammai, right? Okay. Agav, just since I have it open already, Afagav de Beis Shammai Beis Hillel Halacha ke Beis Hillel. First of all, this is fascinating. The Rashbash thinks that we paskin like Beis Shammai, and he thinks that the Rambam paskins like Beis Shammai. Okay, which is not typically. We can understand why he thought that, maybe, but the Rambam in Pirshei Mishnayos says explicitly that he paskins like Beis Hillel. Question is whether he was chozer. In Yad HaChazar, we still have to talk a little bit more about the Rambam. Avagad de Beisham Beis Hillel Halacha Ke Beis Hillel Mash Mahakad Halacha Ke Beis Shammai. Why is that, by the way? Binyamin, de Begamar Amrina, Nora Papa LaRava, Lo matzola erbas dabar, go ahead. So what's he saying? That the whole discussion of Rapapa and Rava is in Beishamai, meaning the Rashbash, you know, reads the Gemara like the Rashba. But he's not related to the Rashba and the Rashbash. He's only related to the Tashbetz. Okay. So, like the Rashba, not like Rashi. Okay, which is, as we noted, is a very critical, subtle but critical argument. Okay. Then he says that in his opinion, so he thinks that proves that we paskin like Beis Shammai, which is very remarkable. Then, of course, he ruins it a little bit. I guess he has to ruin it a little bit. You can't live in a world, you know, where you're going to paskin like Beis Shammai if you interpret Beis Shammai in the more strict and rigorous way, right? Because then there's no Gerushin, basically. The Rashbash did not live in a world. He was a big posek, you know, in Spain, you know, and the son of the Tashbetz, and we'll see in a moment that he was like, you know, even when the Tashbetz was alive, he was grooming, his son, you know, the Rashbash, who he named at the Bris. He was involved all the years. So you cannot, sustain the view that you can't say we paskin like Beis Shammai, and Beis Shammai means either only Dvar Erva, literally, right, and Bein Bezivug Rishon, Bein Bezivug Sheni, because then you're going to have a world where there's no Gittin, right? Which might be a better world in one respect, but it's not a workable world. So then he says, Elamio Dafka Beishto Rishona, She'ena Motzia Elamishum Erva Odavar. He's one of the early people to say that he's suggesting that Beis Shammai, A, applies even to Das Moshe, Das Yehudis, meaning expanded like the Rajba. And secondly, he thinks that the whole Beis Shammai is only Bezivugu, which completely dilutes Beis Shammai. Okay. But in the end of the day, that's his thought. But then he says, and this is what I was referring to with regard to Yedidya, in the he says, Elamia, you have that Imgirsha B'diavad Migureshes. He does think, of course, if Bezivug Sheni, you could do it, you know, even L'chatchila, you know, then you're not going to say Bezivug Rishon, that it doesn't work B'diavad, because you're not working with the notion that this is a din in Kilkul Kedusha Sa'ishus. You're talking about more or less justified grounds, you know, for divorce, where you're doing the right thing, either from a Hilchos Deos point of view or from a Hilchos Gerushin point of view, right? But the flexibility is going to be much greater. But then he says, Elamia im Girsha b'dievid migureshes, the Hachi Itmar b'gemar, because he holds that Rapapa. Now we can understand why he's more comfortable, right, saying Rapapa and Rava are Beis Shammai, to begin with, right? Okay. Then he says, Ubirushalmi Mosif Vachumra, right? She'im Girsha, meaning if it's Lo Matzaba Erbaz Davar, right? And you go ahead and you divorce her anyway, and that is B'dievet Chal, Shem Girsha over below Sase. Wow. So, in the Machon Yerushalayim version of this, they say, one second, what number is this? Yeah. They say, Lo Matzasi, Vizel Lishon Yerushalmi, the regular Yerushalmi. Well, the Yerushalmi says, Elanan Kaiman Liten Alav Lo Sase Viase. Right? But the whoever the editor was, I think he's, you know, correct. He said, what does that have to do, you know, with this? Meaning, somehow the Rashbash, so again, he read it a little bit like you're reading it, but I don't really get it, is what I'm trying to say. But just, you know, it's, first of all, just the Shita itself, A, that the Rashbash holds that we paskin like Beis Shammai, even though he's diluted Beis Shammai. B, that im avar v'giresh, you know, b'li erbas davar, you know, that it's chal b'dieved, but that you violate, it sounds like you violate an asay, right, and a lav, according to the Yerushalmi, and he thinks according to the Bavli, You don't. Okay. Anyway, so that's just interesting to note. I should just add, since I was talking about it, Hashenis, the three halachos, okay. Hashenis ishim mitzvah lagarsha, kigon matzah ba'erva zdavar, o dvar erva, kigon pritzus, and so on. That's a mitzvah lagaresh. Then, in the context of that, just agav, he talks about when there's a mitzvah lagaresh, or the third category where it's just neutral, you know, it's a reshus. So he thinks the nafkamina is number one, whether it's a mitzvah or whether it's a reshus, the nafkamina is mizonos, right? Is he obligated to provide, you know, mizonos? Meaning if it's usur lo lagaresh, I'm sorry, if it's neutral, but, you know, it's not, there's no mitzvah lagaresh, then he's obligated to continue to provide mizonos, which is fascinating. Can you also think that there's another nafkamina, and that is, can you marshal, you know, the good offices of Bezdin? Let's say the Isha doesn't want to be Mekabelis the get, right? Can you, you know, get Bezdin involved? Can you go to the courts and have them intervene? So the Rashbash is of the opinion that depends. If it's a mitzvah or it's a reshus. Ubavadai shebezum, ratzu bezin is kokinlo, v'meina rotza lekablo get, yachrichuho lekablo, where it's a mitzvah. Shakol mesayim udvar mitzvah lehizdarizba. V'im nitleis bagoyim o be'ilon gadol shalol nizgarish, ein la alav mizonos. And that's what it's saying. But this is very fascinating, because what he's trying to say is, you know, isn't get generally bal korcha de'isha? Before Kerem Rabbeinu Gershon. So why can't you have Bezdin intervene? So the Rashbash says that that's a huge mistake. It's just not true that just because get is bal korcha de isha, that means that Bezdin is going to get involved and force the issue. What get being bal korcha de isha means is that if, you know, if he throws her the get and she picks it up, even though she doesn't want to be miskareshes, she's miskareshes. But it doesn't mean that Bezdin will intervene. And that, a little bit responding to Shai, seems to have been a huge, like, emotional, historical, halachic debate in this period. This is what he says. Eina kavana shebezdin yachrichu in a case where it's just lava lekabel get. El shim zarek get bechiko afa pisha eina rotsa liskarish gerushav gerushin afa pisha lo bertzoga. Why do I think it's a big deal? So he says, the kozek korelahem, he's talking about the people who made this mistake and paskin that you can get Bezdin, you know, to intervene in every case. Kozek korelahem machma she'inam yodim motzei ha'halachos. It's actually fascinating. Velo shimshu tamid chachamim alashomim o ma'aynim b'chiburim u'motzim advarim. Maybe people don't have a Mesorah, people are just reading the texts without a deeper understanding of the system of halakha. Shaharei Amishna Amra Ha'isha Miskaresha Shelo Bertzona. Kishiyeda Adam Eich Nishneis V'Alma Nishneis Miyad Yavin, right? She'ein Shelo Bertzona B'Kfi Amamish Ela B'lo Yediyasa. Vari Advarim, I'm skipping. Advarim Brurim Keboker, right? Shebertzona skipping again. Right, likfos. One second. The kama maisim iru bekan. If you didn't know already. Based on the, you know, very strong and larger kind of meta-halachic statement about who should be a posek and what psak means and how much of it is reading texts, how much of it is, you know, being like immersed in the system. So he says that, you know, kama maisim iru bekan, the don kacha adoni avi mori harav, the tashbetz, the chen dante ani b'chayav achre moso. Vanya Yisi Hamotzi Adin Lamito, Vamevioso, El Mechonoso, v'shibchani al zeh, and Papa, you know, gave him a pat on the back and said, you know, you really did well. So that's v'kilsani alav harbe, right? Tanuach nafsho v'edem, etc. V'af bazu ani omer shem eina rotza love of l'kabel get, eina mizonos, etc. Then he says, but once it's Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, that changes the whole equation. And since everybody knows Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, so then it's considered like a merit if you don't, if you do this, but olamizeh, and so on. We don't need to go into that. Anyway, what emerges is a very mechudash view that we pasuk like Beis Shammai, a very mechudash view that according to Beis Shammai, you will also violate a lav if you don't have the proper grounds for divorce. Although, again, for him, it's only zivuk rishon, and even then you violate a lo sase, and it's not b'di'aved, it's not ma'akeh b'di'aved, and it also includes an expanded, you know, ma'isaki or, and so on. Not only doraisas, not only das moshe, but even das yehudis. Nonetheless, he thinks that there is a lav. On the other hand, the category of iser, I'm sorry, mitzvah legarsha, as opposed to rishus, for him is also like, you know, very, very serious. Whenever there's mitzvah legarsha, there are consequences in terms of, you know, the role of bezdin, as well as mizonos, and those do not apply. And then, of course, you have an interesting hagdara of what balkarcha, you know, must mean in these contexts. Okay. So that is in terms of Beis Shammai and the Yerushalmi. Okay. One other point, just to go back to for a minute, we were talking about the question of Bidiyeved. So I mentioned that, you know, partially the discussion, of course, you know, revolves around reading the line in the Gemara, Rav Papa and Rava, you know, and then the connection to, you know, being Megarish and Anusa, you know, and so on. And then I also pointed out that, you know, if you take a step back and you think about it, especially if you hold that Beis Shammai is Ma'akeh B'di'aved, but even otherwise, you know, the question of Anusa, like, looms large. So just to, and then I noted that if you look at the Sugya and Temura, and Tosis there, and Shitim Gubetzis there, I don't want to speak more about this right now, but, you know, the Rishonim there are troubled by this. You know, why wouldn't they... The Gemara is troubled. You know, why wouldn't they be Malkus for Rava, you know, on the very attempt? Why wouldn't, you know, according to Abaya, you know, we apply the normal din? But either way, Bali Tosis and Shitim Gubetzes are troubled by why this isn't, you know, Ma'akev, you know, if typically Yavid Lomahani, you know, in which case they would still be married. And so I just wanted to point out that, again, the Pnei Yeshua here, this is like, you know, Kedarko, notes that, you know, the sugya here is a discussion between Rav Papa and Rava. And, right, it's Amalei Rav Papa l'Rava, lo matza lo erva v'lo davar, mahu. And then the answer is, midigali rachmane gabi ones, lo yuchal l'shachu kol yamav ba'amod v'hachazir. So Rava is the one who, like in Tzmura, you know, is under assault for that very... Halacha, meaning Rava, you know, should have said, maybe, you know, that you're loka, you know, but that it's not chal. Again, the Gemara is asking about the loka part. The Rishonim are asking about, you know, it shouldn't be chal. So it's interesting. Pnei Yeshua just points out that this is the same, you know, Rava. So doesn't Rava typically say kol madom rachman alo savadi avid, you know, lo mahani? So even if there in Tmura there's Xeris HaKasuv, maybe Slavet Klase, whatever, that it's an exception to the Gemara is asking, and it's an exception, but, you know, shouldn't Rava, you know, apply his universal din here? So that's just very interesting, again, in light of, you know, what we've been discussing. And then I just, you know, repeat one more time, and that is that maybe a way to understand all of the answers of the Gemara, of the Rishonim, in Temura, or some of the answers, is that, you know, we're dealing with two very different ideas. And once that is true, you know, how to read the Shaklat Atari of the Gemara here becomes a little more intriguing. And that is that in the case of Anusa, as we discussed, the problem isn't, the inability to, get divorced. The problem is the obligation to support her, in the context of a marriage, as long as she, wills that, as long as she wants that. Because again, it's compensation, for the initial encounter and its implications. And that has nothing to do, the quality of that ishus. On the contrary, one may be even be able to make the point that the quality of the ishus of anusa to begin with is compromised, and ironically, there's an obligation that he marry her if she so chooses, right? That basically this is an ishus which starts off, and is born in a way, from an absence of kedusha. And therefore, the idea that, Dafka here, ironically, on the one hand, there's more of an obligation, to remarry her, but but there's also maybe more flexibility, from a Chefzashel Ishus point of view, to justify divorce. So again, all this discussion in Sukkis and Temura and the Pnei Yeshua here and so on, I just think that we're dealing with very different types of issues. Okay, that is pretty much what I want to say about Beis Shammai. Let's turn our attention now to Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. We'll have to stop in a minute, but hopefully we're almost finished. So just on the Beis Hillel, part of it, as we've discussed already. So again, within Beis Shammai, we've seen a range. Likewise, it's possible that for Beis Hillel there's a range. In other words, just the Pashtus Beis Shammai, if you read it just narrowly, this is a din in Chatzashal Ishus and Kedusha and so on and so forth. And the Pashtus for Beis Hillel, Gdicha Tavshilo, sounds or looks, like a whip. And Ether reflects, just the, the volitional character of Ishus, we'll call it, I wouldn't say it's value neutral, but the point is that what we think about that, is not, what is Koveya. In the end of the day, the overriding bigger, principle is that people have rights, or at least he has a right. He married her, as an act of Bechira, and he has the right to get divorced. That's one way to look at it. And even if we were to acknowledge that Hikdicha Tavshilo is a whim, and it's extremely unsavory. Maybe it's unsavory in the Chosdeos, but it's still totally acceptable in the Chosgerushin as an act of Bechira. Or, what I've been trying to suggest, and there are two iterations, broadly speaking, of that as well, and that is that, in Achanami, it's a whim and it's trivial, but the fact that he wants to divorce, for a whim and for something trivial, either as an investment in the marriage to begin with, or as a shiur in the higher standard, even ironically, of Davar Shebekdusha, the relationship between them, somebody who sees his wife as his cook, and therefore wants to get rid of her because, she's not, a master chef, I guess. Hikdicha Tavshilo, is that about a chef, or that's a baker, a chef? I don't know. Stephen, you know? Okay. Whatever it is, whatever the proper terminology is, she's not like an elite cooker or baker. Obviously, that reflects like a very compromised perspective on Ishus, to begin with. So either that, or if you don't want to say, if you acknowledge the whim, so these are two opposite ways to look at the whim, part of it. The middle idea is to say that Ikdicha Tavshilo is not as trivial or as frivolous as you might think. That Ikdicha Tavshilo, really refers to, it can't ever, rise to the level of a narrow Beis Shammai, certainly not an actual Davar Shebe'erva in any way, But maybe, you know, in terms of, like, reflecting objectively that there is a serious problem of compatibility or of the, you know, toxicity of the relationship as it has evolved, maybe a little bit like the Chumas-Aran case, you know. You know, you don't want the relatives, you know, to keep, you know, intervening. And so then, you know, obviously, you know, what Beis Hillel is saying is a little more than that. So this middle idea, well, let me start with the other. The idea that this is a whim is certainly reflected in the first day of Sefer HaChinuch, as we discussed. I was suggesting that we could reformulate it a little bit, you know, to make it an act of will. But basically the Chinuch, according to the first view, is basically, you know, arguing that Beis Hillel, that Hikdichat Tavshilo is, you know, a silly, you know, an offensive, you know, reason to be Megarish. And while the Gerishim may be good, from a Hilchos Deos point of view, that doesn't mean this person is, you know, justified or that he is, you know, appropriate. The Pnei Yoshua, for a different reason, which I'll explain in a moment, also has this view, you know, that Hikdicha Tavshilo is a whim. He thinks of it as a passing, you know, fleeting, you know, circumstance, you know, that triggers anger, you know, and, you know, it's here today and gone tomorrow. The Pnei Yoshua, interestingly, is contrasting, and this is the, you know, you could go in either, you know, Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel. As we noted, whatever we're saying about Beis Hillel now, you know, the same question arises for Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't have to be the same answer, right? Either it's possible to distinguish between Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, Gufa, in this question, but in my opinion, in either direction. You could say, you know, either Beis Hillel is a more serious offense, or Rabbi Akiva is a more serious offense. That's who's the one who believes in the whim, and who's the one who believes in a kind of middle level, you know, justified, you know, toxic relationship grounds for divorce. So the Pnei Yoshua has a very interesting suggestion. He thinks that Hikdicha Tavshilo is, as I say, fleeting. And he thinks that Matza Isha Na Heimeno is a permanent, you know, situation. And that in some respect it's more justified for two reasons. If somebody could get the line, it'd be good. One reason is it's, you know, maybe it's he's an anus, meaning, you know, his feelings changed, his head was turned, you know, but sof, this is the way that he feels, and he can't, you know, maybe it's not admirable, but he can't extricate himself from it, says the Pnei Yoshua. So in some respect, he's an anus. You know, this is how he feels. She didn't do anything wrong. His behavior, you know, that leads him, you know, to this hatred of her, or whatever it is, or this obsession to move on, is, you know, improper, certainly not admirable, but he's not a role model for anybody. But in the end of the day, you know, it's still grounds for divorce because he can't help himself. Or, Inami, this is very more important, and this gets closer to, you know, my, you know, continued suggestion. Inami, he says, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter why he feels the way that he feels, or even whether it's justified. In the end of the day, this is how he feels. And therefore, she's kind of like a grusha slave. And as a grusha, you know, slave, you know, in his heart, he wants to divorce her. So, you know, the kedusha of the ishus, you know, militates against them continuing, you know, their life together. Anybody have the Eitan, you have it? But in this way, he's trying also to explain, I'll let you read it in just one more second, he wants to explain, he wants to be miyashev, like a small question, but a question that the Rajba has on the Yerushalmi. Ah, what does the Yerushalmi say? Yeah.
Question.
Sure.
How does he read the Mishnah?
Say that again?
Mishnah has like a figu lashon. It seems like it's progressing to more.
You mean it sounds in the Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva is less than Beis Hillel?
Not known.
I mean, there are 3 days in the Mishnah, right?
Right.
There have to be a progression?
Well, sounds like afilu matza aheres naimana. Doesn't that sound a little bit more like...
Well, no, I hear that. It could be. I mean, it would say... I think the Rambam holds that way. The Rambam Pirush Mishnayos in particular, which we'll get to. Because the Rambam Pirush Mishnayos says about Rabbi Akiva, there's no justification whatsoever. But even if you were to explain according to Yeshua, maybe the afilu is the absence of justification. I think there are two issues. One is this justified? The other is, forget about whether it's justified, is the present reality a grounds for divorce? So what I would say is, I think you're right, the Rambam certainly read, you know, and that's why the Rambam, see in Pirush Mishnayos, says, forget about Rabbi Akiva, we certainly don't paskin like him. You know, Rambam, it's very rare the Rambam, Pirush Mishnayos, is so judgmental about a shita satanoim. You know, not, I'm not talking about psak, it's more like, I don't even understand Rabbi Akiva, like, you know, but he has a certain view of what Rabbi Akiva is saying. It's not this view of Pnei Yeshua. But for Pnei Yeshua, I guess the afilu would be, you know, there are two issues here. The moral judgment, you know, is this appropriate, is less. Right? He shouldn't have a roving eye. You know, he should have cultivated Naki Alabeso Shana Achas, you know, a bond with his wife. Maybe he should have been more careful before he made the initial decision. Once he did, you know, he should invest in it. Whatever it is, right? So that's a filu. But in the end of the day, as an ilah, you know, legaresh, as grounds for divorce... You know, maybe it's more tough. You have the line, Eitan? Go ahead. It's a little louder, if you can. Number one, libo onso. Even though, again, it might be an indictment of his values, right? But that's still the reality. And then inami, or whatever it is, go ahead. Oh. Now that line is what I've been, you know, kind of pushing. And Rav has something like that in an essay in Family Redeemed that I was going to read on Monday, but I didn't get to it, but maybe this Monday. Akiva, how can you be here? What? I like it. Like, you know, this is not the first time. I like it. I'm going to adopt your way of... that's good. Okay. Sort of like that's very fascinating. So anyways, he uses this to explain... Did you see what he wants to explain? He uses to explain the Yerushalmi to be Miyashev the Rajva's question. It's a little question, not a big question. Like the other Yerushalmi is like a big question. You know, this is a littler question. What's Yerushalmi? Eitan, you saw it?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you allowed to, when a woman's in the state of nida, is she allowed to basically put on makeup, right? Or not? So the zakenim arishonim, what is it? Yeah, it's also Gemara in Shabbos, by the way, on Samach Dalet on the base, but the Gemara in Shabbos doesn't have the last line that the Yerushalmi has. Okay, so what, the zakenim arishonim, is that what they're called?
Yeah,
what do they say?
They
say you're not allowed to because she's a nida. Right. And then Rabbi Akiva says, Shema Tiskana al Bala, Vigarshena. So the Bavli just has it like that. That's it. Right? The Yerushalmi has an extra line. What is Yerushalmi's extra line? Beisila. They say, does Kainim hold like Beishamai? And that's why, what do you mean? They're not going to be Megarisher because, you know, Tiskana al Bala. And Beishilel, which, by the way, is fascinating because even if that's true, it doesn't mean that there isn't an important value in Shalot Tiskana al Baila, right? I mean, short of divorce? Unless what they're saying is, listen, you're weighing, there's a certain dialectic here, you're weighing two things, right? On the one hand, you know, Isurei Nida, and the Harchakos of that, you know, against, you know, so, you know, okay. Either way, so the question, the Rajba, Alatar, here, quotes Yerushalmi and asks, why does it say that Rabbi Akiva's Shita is based on Beis Hillel? It should have said Rabbi Akiva's Shita is based on Rabbi Akiva. So quite, you know, that's the Rajba. And Rajba believes it, but Tzarachia. So, again, one way to answer the Yerushalmi would be to say, you know, Rabbi Akiva is just a take on... There's a big machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. You know, and it's a conceptual argument, not just a factual argument. And Rabbi Akiva is a subcategory. I know I'm going over, I'm going to stop for one more minute. Is a subcategory. You know, it's a detail within Beis Hillel. There aren't three shittos in the Mishnah. There are two shittos in the Mishnah, and Rabbi Akiva is either an agreed upon Echatimsi or an expanded Echatim, but it's in the worldview of Beis Hillel. That's not what the Pnei Yeshua said. Pnei Yeshua says something fascinating. Pnei Yeshua says, you know why it doesn't say Rabbi Akiva's Lashitaso, but Rabbi Akiva's lying on Beis Hillel? Because the makeup question, Shalot Tisgana, is not what Rabbi Akiva means in the Mishnah when he says, Shema, right, Timatz, Shema, you know, Yimtza, you know, Isha, Na, Heimena. Because actually, Beis Hillel, Zikdicha Tavshilo, is fleeting. Right? It's a blip in the radar screen. Right? But Rabbi Akiva is you know, again, not admirable, but it's a new reality and it's not going away. So what, she can't put on makeup, you know, while she's in the state of Nida, and he's going to hate her forever? So when the period of Nida is over, you know, she'll go to the... you know, to the people, and you know, they'll do what they do, right? And we'll leave it at that, you know. So, right, the hairstylist or whatever it is, and I should leave it at that. That's why Akiva's here. He's being marched completely, you know, from all of that. Like a really wise move. Yeah. So, right. So that's what he says. Oh. Rabbi Akiva in the Yerushalmi, you know, that Yerushalmi is adopting the view of Beis Hillel, because from his own perspective, it wouldn't work either. There's not a Nusa Salev, and there's no, you know, a Grusha Salev, right? Very interesting. However, having said that, in theory, you can say the opposite, right? Again, and the Rambam does in Perish Mishnah. Rambam in Perish Mishnayis, who has the line open? Akiva, we should give you, like, you know, go ahead, read the line. This way, the Dore Doros, you know, you're, when they play over the tape or whatever it is, everybody will know that you're here. You know. You have it?
Yes.
Now, the Ram says, I don't even understand Rabbi Akiva. Right? It's not, there's no Cherem Rabbeinu Gershon at that time. You know, he wants to marry somebody else, and I'm going to marry somebody else in addition. I find that to be a little bit of a shocking comment. I mean, just because it's a heter to marry more than one person doesn't mean, you know, that it's always, you know, such an easy alternative. You know, both emotionally and, I'll say the other way, both economically, you know, and emotionally. You know, the idea that there's a heter and therefore... You know, you can accomplish these two things at the same time. I find that just a strange argument. But either way, it doesn't matter to me. Either way, the Rambam's taking a stand. The Rambam's basically saying, I don't get Rabbi Akiva at all. I'm dismissing it completely. Keep going. Ah, now that's an important line. Meaning, he says, after all, in the case of Rabbi Akiva, and in a way he's kind of saying... He's kind of joining the Pnei Yeshua in theory, but not in practice. In other words, he's saying if Rabbi Akiva's idea was that somehow, you know, either she was chote, you know, caused this, or that they were incompatible, right? You know, then Mela, but that's not what he says. He just says, it's a noibi alma, it's a totally superficial attraction, right? So number one, he has another vehicle. But number two, it's nothing. The Pnei Yeshua is saying it isn't nothing. You know, it's a reality, and he can't go back. Correct? And then, by the way, the last line of the Rambam. Halak Beis Hillel, and that's a question about, yeah, what you want to ask.
Does that mean he has a more expensive view of Beis Hillel?
He what?
I
think so. I think so. That's what I think. What I think is implicit in the Rambam is that Ikdicha, that's why I'm quoting it in this way. I'm not 100% sure, I know he's very dismissive of Rabbi Akiva. I mean, what the Pnei Yeshua says about Rabbi Akiva and what the Rambam says about Pnei, Rabbi Akiva are really opposites. Now, again, if the Rambam bought into, Pnei Yeshua's assessment of Rabbi Akiva, would he have said that? I think not. But the implication is that Beis Hillel is not. Oh, okay. I mean, you don't have the, Yochal Lisa, Acheres, so much. That isn't an issue. But the idea that, what's he doing this for? There's no reason. There's no justification. Sounds like Hikdicha Tavshilo, maybe it. So Hikdicha Tavshilo, interestingly, and Motzisha Nahimena, each of these could be understood in a different way, as we discussed. So number one, the Me'iri, who says that this isn't just, he burnt the stew. It's not a culinary thing. It's not it's not about the food. It's a reflection of, again, a toxic, marital environment in which, she's kind of defying, there's a nasty, dynamic between these two people. That's basically what the Me'iri says. The Tur, and also the Levush, has this as well, say, it's Pshia. Pshia is less than what the Me'iri is describing. But again, at least you can see, she's not a diligent wife. And that diligence obviously reflects, some breakdown, in their relationship, A, and B, maybe grounds in terms of his quality of life, at the most noble grounds, maybe. Maybe there's therapy would be a better idea. But in the end of the day, it's, that it is what it is, right? Not only that, but there's a Gemara, a very interesting Gemara in Brachos, and with this we'll conclude for the day. Sorry for the overtime. The Gemara in Brachos Yud Zayin on the base. Benny?
About
I think there the Gemara is talking about, it's all an interpretation of a Pasuk.
Yeah.
So the Gemara is talking about, this problem and that problem of, with your family, with your friends, with your children, with the last one, Ein Peretz Ve'Ein Yotzeis, that whole darshaning that pasuk in Tehillim. So we don't know exactly what Makdiach Tavshilo Barabim is, but it's definitely not culinary. Right? Meaning it's kind of it's obviously it could be an expression of wayward behavior. Right, I don't know if it's Ben Sora or Mora exactly, but it's, somebody who's not Sanua, or who's destructive, a bad seed of some sort, correct? Or a bad Talmud of some sort. So, if that's the pshat in Beis Hillel, again, it's not Motzav Ayarmas Davar, but it's not trivial either, right? Okay, so we'll stop here. I want to talk a little more about Rabbi Akiva. I want to talk about the Psak and the Rambam and those Gemaras in the Darim Daf Chav. Vamos, meaning Gusha Slave a little bit. And I really want to talk about Masa Gusha So and try to finish up on Sunday. Okay?